between, a collection of stories from places that may seem familiar and others that may not. Tales from the In-Between is a monthly storytelling podcast featuring writing by Kirk Johnson, narration by Corey M. Crosdale and Kirk Johnson, and illustrations by Corey M. Crosdale. Make sure to follow at Tales from the In-Between and at Corey M. Crosdale Art for high-quality versions of the episode illustrations. Our story today is How Does Your Garden Grow?, in which a boy is left alone to fend for himself on the family farm. This episode is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 4.0 International License. You may copy and share the audio, but you may not sell it, and you may not alter it. Now, without further ado, how does your garden grow? The sun rose over the sea of grass, the golden stalks set ablaze by the rising. The heads of the tall grass dozed lazily in the dawn light, occasionally nodding as a gentle breeze crept across the high plain. The sea of gold seemed to extend in all directions towards the horizon, and Jeremy knew nothing else. It stretched on into forever, only abated by the edges of the small clearing where the weathered wood of Pa's house stood. Pa had gone off into the grass a few days ago. Jeremy wasn't exactly sure how many days it had been, but he knew it hadn't been a week yet because the big knife in the kitchen didn't need sharpening. He wasn't rightly sure where Pa had gone, but he wasn't in the house, and he wasn't in the barn. Jeremy had even lowered a lantern down into the well and into the pit under the necessary, but Pa was nowhere to be found. Jeremy had spent a good portion of the first morning looking for his father, but the pained lowing of Hinky, their old milk cow, reminded Jeremy that life went on, Pa or no Pa. There was still the garden to tend, and of course Hinky had to be seen to. Pa would come back, or he wouldn't, Jeremy concluded. Pa or no Pa, there were chores to do. His father had been teaching him how to run their little farm in the sea of grass. For as long as Jeremy could remember, it had been him, Pa, Hinky, and the chickens. Jeremy had had a ma once, though try as he might, he couldn't remember her at all. "Your mama was real beautiful," Jeremy's father would say. "She had hair the color of tall grass shining in the summer sun. Her eyes were bright as the blue spring sky, and her laugh was the soft dance of autumn rain on our roof." Pa never said where Jeremy's ma had gone, and Jeremy never thought to press his father for more. Pa said she was gone, and that was enough. And now Pa was gone with no word or sign that he would return. Jeremy didn't mind being alone at first. With Pa gone, the chores that used to take him most of the morning now stretched to lunchtime. He didn't mind, though. The extra chores helped fight the silence. It wasn't like he and Pa had even talked all that much. Most days would go by without more than 5 or 6 words between them. The silence wore on him, and Hinky wasn't much of a conversation partner. Jeremy couldn't understand why he missed even those few words as much as he did. He had never noticed the smell of his Pa or the sounds the big man made as he moved through the world until he was gone. Why was that? What was it about Pa leaving that made Jeremy suddenly see and hear and smell the absence? It hurt his head if he thought about it for too long, so instead he set projects for himself. The house received a fresh coat of paint all over. Leaks were found and sealed. The barn doors, which had never hung perfectly flush, were set to rights. The garden was immaculate, not a weed to be found. Windows sparkled. Jeremy kept adding to his list until one day there was nothing left to add and nothing left to cross off. Reluctantly, he took the big book off the mantle. Words had always been a bit of a stumbling block for Jeremy, so he talked little, read less, and didn't write at all. He was perfectly happy to work in the garden or on the hundreds of other small tasks that kept the farm running. But now, with nothing else to do when all of the day's work was done, Jeremy set himself a real challenge. He was going to read the big book from cover to cover. Progress was slow at first. Jeremy would stare at the page for what felt like hours, trying to wrestle meaning from the letters in their endless ranks. He'd read until his head was throbbing, and then he'd doze in his hammock until his stomach said it was time to make dinner. He'd managed to make it about 10 pages into the big book when a thought struck him. Letters were like little seeds that, when planted in rows together, made up words that told a story. Thinking about the big book like a gigantic garden through which he could wander made Jeremy's head hurt less, and soon he had read 20 pages, a feat that before Pa had left would have seemed impossible. The going was still slow, but Jeremy began to look forward to the time spent at the kitchen table, the big book spread open before him, the sun traveling ever so slowly across the pages as the story of the man and the great white whale began to take shape. Jeremy found that he was less lonely, though no book could ever replace his paw. He took to telling Hinky about what he'd read the day before, when he'd milked the old cow in the mornings, though if she had any opinions about the book, she kept her own counsel. The idea of a never-ending sea of water was hard for Jeremy to understand, given that the biggest body of water he'd ever seen was when Pa used to make him fill the wash basin and take a bath every 10 days or so. The idea of the ocean filled his mind and kept bringing him back to the book to struggle his way through a page or two each afternoon. He was about halfway through the big book when he found the thing in the garden. Jeremy had been weeding around the tomatoes when he saw the thing, tucked in the shadow of a particularly fat tomato. It was squat, with a small, darkly colored cap. It came out of the ground easily, snapping off on its thin, pale stem. Jeremy inspected it, but could find no roots. When he dug around a little where he had seen the stem protruding from the ground, he found nothing. Scratching his head, Jeremy set it aside and continued with his chores. Before he sat down to read that afternoon, he inspected the thing more carefully. It was a little shorter than his thumb. The cap and stem were spongy, and when he squeezed the cap, a purplish dust that reminded Jeremy of moth wings stained his fingertips. The thing had no smell, and he knew enough not to taste things of unknown origin. He set it aside and opened the big book to where he'd left off. It remained on the table until the next morning when he noticed it during breakfast. Jeremy gave the thing a final inspection, found nothing new or interesting, and then tossed it out into the ocean of tall grass. The strange thing was quickly forgotten as the vegetables began to ripen. The garden consumed most of his time for the next few weeks as vegetables needed to be picked and preserved, whether that was through drying or jarring or just storing them in the root cellar. Jeremy never did like the root cellar. It was dark and cool, and there were strange white roots that he swore moved when he wasn't looking right at them. He told Pa about those roots, and Pa told Jeremy not to make up such foolish stories. There was nothing in the root cellar that could hurt them, Jeremy's Pa assured, though he couldn't say what kind of plant to which the large, bony roots belonged. Jeremy made sure to store the root cellar vegetables first when the sun was the brightest. Regardless of how much sunlight filtered down the earthen steps and into the cellar, Jeremy would always bring the lantern, its flame turned up high to combat any shadows that may lurk in the cool, quiet underground. One day, about a week into the harvest, a thought struck Jeremy. He was more afraid of the root cellar now than when he'd been little. At first, he could not determine why such a thing could be true. His pa was a grown man, and he never showed a moment's hesitation about going down into the cellar. It dawned on Jeremy then that Pa had always gone with him. But now that Pa had disappeared, even though Jeremy was older, he missed the reassuring presence of his father. He wondered if all fathers had the power to drive off their children's fear, like Hinky swatting flies with her tail, or if that was something special about just his Pa. The question lingered for as long as it took Jeremy to climb the soft dirt stairs, and the bright light of the day snatched the thought away like a greedy bird. Jeremy was so preoccupied with the harvest, how much easier it had been when he had merely had to help Pa, that he found little time to read. Many were the days that he'd find himself nodding off while giving Hinky her evening milking, but soon the harvest was done, and Jeremy was well stocked with summer produce. There would be new fall crops to plant in a week or so, but for now Jeremy had more time to himself than he'd ever had since Pa left. Hours were spent poring over the pages of the big book, following the relentless pursuit of the great white whale. Just what such a monstrous beast could look like, Jeremy could not imagine, but he thought he'd risk an encounter with such a creature to leave the farm behind and sail on a sea of water. Two things happened in the week or so between harvesting the summer crops and preparing the garden for the fall sowing. Jeremy turned 11, and the dreams began. If he'd ever dreamt before that, he had no recollection of it. The shock of the images appearing in his mind during sleep was so strong that he awoke, the tendrils of the dream clinging like the cobwebs out of reach in the high corners of the barn. He dreamt of the ocean. Not the waving stalks of grass that surrounded the farm, extending forever in all directions as far as Jeremy knew, but an ocean like the one from the big book. He'd seen it, water so blue it was almost black with no sign of a bottom. The gentle rise and fall of the waves, and the way they made the floor, deck, he reminded himself, deck, beneath his feet sway back and forth like the movement of his hammock. It was such a shock, in fact, that Jeremy nearly tumbled out of the hammock and onto the hardwood. The dream did not scare him in the way the root cellar did. On some subconscious level, Jeremy knew what the dream was, though he couldn't put it into words. Pa and him had certainly never talked about dreams, and for all Jeremy knew, his pa didn't have dreams at all. No, he wasn't scared by the dream. He was intrigued. But, dream or no dream, there were chores to get to, and planting to be done. With those responsibilities and the vision of the ocean rolling around in his head, Jeremy almost forgot that he was a year older. He supposed it was because Pa wasn't here to remind him. They didn't do a lot to mark the occasion, but his Pa would always cook up a big mess of corn cakes and scrambled eggs. The smell of that particular meal was really how Jeremy knew he was another year older, rather than any particular date. Swinging his feet over the side of the hammock, Jeremy resolved to make the meal for himself. He was 11 now, damn it, and had been running the farm on his own for near a whole year. So resolved, he gathered his ingredients and set to making breakfast. As he crossed the yard, having gathered eggs from beneath the loudly protesting hens, Jeremy noticed a circle of dark spots in the closely cropped grass. As he approached, he recognized them as more of that strange capped thing he'd found in the garden over the summer. Bending low, he inspected the ring, and then straightened up and dug at one of them with the toe of his boot. It snapped off at ground level quite easily, its pale stalk sweating a little in the morning sun. Jeremy took the eggs inside and set them on the table, his breakfast plans forgotten. He returned to the ring and inspected the other occupants. Each was roughly the same size, about as tall as Jeremy's pointer finger was long. The caps were all dark and semicircular. He plucked one between thumb and forefinger and sniffed at it gingerly. The thing smelled like wet earth and something else Jeremy couldn't quite place. When he rolled the cap between his fingers, it collapsed, leaving that bruised violet dust across his skin, same as he'd first found on the one before. Jeremy considered for a moment what to do with the things. He already knew he shouldn't try to eat them. He had no idea what they were. He was about to uproot the lot of them and toss them out into the sea of grass like he'd done with the one he'd found in the garden, when a thought occurred to him. Retrieving an empty jar from the kitchen and a shovel from the barn, Jeremy carefully dug one of the things out of the ground, making sure to preserve a healthy helping of soil around its base. He'd keep one on the windowsill and see what happened. He guessed the thing was some kind of plant, because it sure didn't resemble no animal he'd ever heard of. The rest of the ring he kicked or yanked out of the ground, chucking their limp bodies into the tall grass. By the time he was done, his hands were covered in that powdery violet stuff that was hidden under the dark caps. He placed the lone survivor on the windowsill near the basin and set about making his birthday breakfast, memory jogged by the sight of the eggs and the cornmeal on the table. He dreamt of the ocean again that night, but this time he didn't awake as soon as the dream began. He was on the boat, on the ocean again. Water stretched to the horizon in all directions. He stared for a long time out across the expanse of waves, feeling the wind play across his face. He woke the next morning feeling more rested than he could remember being in a long time. The image of the ocean filled his mind, and he chattered about it to Hinky, who swished her tail in a noncommittal response. Try as he might to apply himself in earnest to the rest of his chores that day, Jeremy's mind kept drifting back to the ocean. The sun riding low in the sky when he'd finished with the day's work. Despite the lateness of the hour, Jeremy retrieved the ladder from the barn and set it against the side of the house. He managed to clamber up to where the battered weather vane turned lazily in the breeze and, shading his eyes against the sun, surveyed the horizon. The deja vu was unsettling, and for a moment Jeremy wasn't sure if he was awake or asleep. But the afternoon sun transforming the grass into a gently swaying sea of gold chased the feeling from him. He was at home, and he was awake. He stood there, one hand on the weather vane, trying to catch sight of anything that wasn't the grass until the sun sank below the horizon. Jeremy knew it would be stupid to try to climb down from the roof in the dark, though he did not want to abandon his makeshift crow's nest. Contenting himself with a promise to return to the roof after tomorrow's chores were done, he climbed down to prepare dinner. He spent every afternoon of the next few weeks up on the roof, staring out across this great sea of grass, pretending to see the spot of the white whale, or the prow of a ship, or the sandy shore of a faraway island off in the distance. He'd taken to reading by the light of the fireplace before bed, the chill of the autumn nights necessitating its lighting. The dreams would come and go, but they were always the same. Jeremy, alone on the deck of a proper ship in the middle of the ocean. Much like his afternoon spent on the roof, he never glimpsed anything but the surrounding sea. Somehow he knew the ship was moving towards something in his dreams, though he could not say what. He wished it were the same in his waking life, that the little island that was the farm in the sea of grass was adrift towards something, anything but where he was. A sense of being trapped began to creep into Jeremy's waking hours, a feeling he could never quite shake, no matter how engrossed in his chores or the big book he became. The feeling was at odds with his pa's warnings to never venture out into the sea of grass. Even now, more than a year gone, Jeremy could hear his pa's voice in his head. "Don't go into the grass, son. It's a way of calling out to a man, I know. But steer clear. Once you're in there, it's too easy to get turned around and get lost. My own pa told me stories he'd known of people who'd wandered off into the grass and were never seen again." "Well, pa," Jeremy thought, "it's too bad you didn't listen to Grandpa. Otherwise, you'd be here now to help me understand." Jeremy was coming close to the end of the big book, and he wasn't quite sure what he was going to do when that happened. There were a few others on the mantle, but after the feelings that this one had awoken in him, he wasn't sure if he could heed Pa's warnings about staying put on the farm if those other books held stories of far-off places he'd never be able to visit except in his dreams. Each morning, Jeremy would check on the strange plant. It was a plant, not an animal, he decided, to see if there had been any change. So far, nothing. It bothered Jeremy that such a plant could just spring up overnight, practically right under his nose, and now that he'd taken an interest in it, it refused to grow or wilt or die or anything. Shortly after transplanting it to the windowsill, Jeremy had watered it a couple times a week. When this yielded no results, he took to watering it once a week, then not watering it at all. No matter what he did, the strange plant remained the same. Dreams and afternoons spent gazing at the horizon aside, Jeremy was at heart a practical soul. He let the plant be. It would do whatever it was going to do in its own time and apparently didn't need nor want Jeremy's assistance. So resolved, Jeremy left the strange plant to its own devices. Whether he realized it or not, the dreams began to change once he learned to leave the plant alone. One particularly cold autumn night, Jeremy found himself on the deck of the ship. This was not new. He dreamt of nothing but the gently rolling deck and the endless ocean nearly every night since he turned 11. However, this night, as he turned and scanned the horizon in all directions, he saw something far off in the distance. He could not make out any detail of whatever it was, only knowing it was there because it did not fit with his memory of what that particular patch of water and sky had looked like every dream previous. He stared at whatever it was until he woke up, but it didn't seem to move or draw closer. He spent the next day half distracted, tracing over the shape in his mind's eye, trying in vain to wrestle some meaning from its appearance. If Jeremy hadn't been so distracted, he might have noticed a similar shape on the distant horizon that afternoon as he half-heartedly scanned the sea of grass. However, his mind was so consumed that when he saw the thing, he immediately explained it away as a trick of his overworked mind. He took the appearance of the shape in the waking world as a sign that he needed to climb down from the roof, make a light dinner, and go to bed early. Had he waited, had he trusted his eyes, Jeremy might have seen the shape move, but he was already down the ladder and crossing the threshold into the kitchen. That night, the shape was in his dream again. It hadn't moved from its spot on the horizon, but Jeremy knew the ship must be headed toward it, because it was definitely closer. It had to be an island of some kind, he decided. There was no way a living thing would linger in the same exact place for so long. This realization sparked a flame of impatience in him. He wandered the ship, trying to find a way to make it travel faster. No luck. He willed the ship to move faster, but nothing happened. Frustrated, he stared at the shape on the horizon until the dream dissolved around him, eyes snapping open. Jeremy briefly contemplated going back to sleep, but somehow he knew that it wouldn't work. He heaved himself out of the hammock and went to milk Hinky. Chores were completed. A storm had blown in that afternoon, and Jeremy was forced to abandon his watch on the roof long before the sun sank below the horizon. Had he braved the wind and rain, Jeremy might have seen the shape in the distance move closer, but he was bundled in a blanket before the fire, the big book open on his lap. Only 20 or so pages to go. It was an island. He could see it from the railing of the ship as it drew ever closer. Jeremy still had no idea how far away the body of land was, but he knew he was getting closer. Contenting himself that progress was being made and nothing he could do would speed it up, he watched the island slowly grow in size over the course of the night. What he'd once been able to block out with a thumb now required his whole hand. The next night, it was his arm, and the following, he could make out the sand of the beach and the tallest stalks of grass he'd ever seen, with wide-spreading heads of leaves, like the ones that grew on the tomato vines. Having never seen trees, these came as quite a shock to Jeremy. He woke the next morning not in the hammock, but standing in the yard between the barn and the house. If he'd been more awake, Jeremy might have realized he was standing in what used to be the circle of those strange plants. But he was too disoriented to notice. That night, he dreamt that the ship had reached the shore of the island. He could see two figures beneath the leaves of the great dark stalks of grass. Just before he woke, the people stepped out onto the sunny sand of the beach. It was his pa, and the woman holding Pa's hand had to be his ma. Jeremy just knew it. He woke to find himself outside again, his nightclothes crinkling with frost. The next day was a blur. A fever coursed through his blood, leaving him shivering under a pile of blankets by the fire 1 minute, and then shedding his clothes the next, sweat prickling his skin. He could hear the pained lowing of Hinky from the barn, but Jeremy could do nothing for the poor old cow. He spent the day in a haze, trying at times to read from the big book, but the words kept swimming in front of his fevered eyes. Night came and he bundled himself into his hammock, the fever banking enough to allow Jeremy to fall asleep. He was there on the shore of the island, his parents standing at the edge of the shadowy forest, half in and half out of the blazing sunlight. Jeremy could feel the soft sand beneath his bare feet as he walked towards them. They looked to be saying something, arms outstretched to him, but they were too far away for Jeremy to make out the words. He ran to them and was swept up into the burly arms of his father. Tears of joy, unheeded, streamed down Jeremy's face as he looked back and forth between his parents. His father was telling him how proud he was of his son for making such a long journey just so that they could be together as a family again. Jeremy resolved to never let his parents out of his sight. Tears slowly subsiding, he clutched his father's neck, trying to catch glimpses of his long-lost mother over his father's burly shoulder. She was even more beautiful than Pa had said, and she beamed at Jeremy when she caught his eye. Relief flooded the boy's body. It was over now. He would never be alone again. The thing that embraced the sleeping boy was a roiling, monolithic mass. It rose out of the tall grass, two long, pulsing pseudopods projecting from its body in grotesque parody of human forms. One was in the process of engulfing Jeremy's sleeping form, the translucent protuberance pulsing with a sickly inner light. When there was no trace left of the boy, the mass receded back into the tall grass, its amorphous, pulsing body disappearing beneath the gently nodding heads of the stalks, turned bone white by the indifferent moon. That same moon shone down on a number of little farmsteads just like Jeremy's. It is a mistake humans make at their own peril, assuming they are the only beings who raise animals on which to feed.
Thank you for listening to Tales from the In-Between. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at Tales from the In-Between. If you enjoy our show and would like to help keep the weird content flowing, consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/schemescometrue. Until next time, listeners.